This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I think I said this earlier. I've had to ask myself several times today, what day is it, right, Sue? Because of the holiday.
Yeah.
Kind of throws us off. And then there's the snow days, which will continue to throw us off. Are you seeing things in our area right now, by the way?
Yeah, like
the
immediate area? It's moving in from the south and from the west a little bit.
I don't like it.
I don't either.
Although, you know, here's one issue. I thought I was going to have to drive home in it. And you're right about one thing. Even when I came in here several hours ago, people have taken the day off.
They really
right?
have.
And they're not on the roads, which is a good thing because there's too many people that don't know how to drive or they have bare tires, et cetera. So we're going to keep you posted. Dave says that maybe 3 to 6 inches, depending on where you are, certainly to the south, a little bit more. And well, north of where we are, I think they're going to get very little, you know, just a little dusting or so. So we'll keep you posted on all of that. J. Peter Zane is back with us this afternoon. He's an editor at Real Clear Investigations, has written about Doge. I want to talk about Doge. There's some interesting things even in the aftermath of the weekend related to Elon Musk. And the big interview is tonight on Fox with Sean Hannity, the president, Elon Musk. Peter Zane, how are you? Welcome back to 97.1 FM Talk.
Oh, thanks so much for having me again. Yeah, we're getting some weather here in Raleigh, too, and I feel like before long, everybody's going to live in Florida.
Our deal here is it's just I don't know about Raleigh, but we just have not had a real winter. We used to here in St. Louis, but we haven't had one in a while, right, Sue? You know, we've had some dumpings of some snow. Sometimes we get, you know, dumping in March and it's wet snow, but this has really been a real winter. I mean, really cold, lots of snow, ice. We don't like it, Peter. That's all we're saying.
We don't like it, but we love Doge.
We do. Now, let me ask this, because, you know, you and I haven't talked about this yet. I've read some of what you've written, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. But one of the things that people have asked me, and these are usually people who don't support Doge, all right, hey, what do you think about all this? You know, well, I think I like it. And here's why. Because if you go back to 1984, when I first voted for an American president, Ronald Reagan, I philosophically always wanted federal bureaucracy and the federal government to be reduced size, scope, spending, all of that. We've never done it, Peter, as you know. It doesn't matter if there's a Republican Congress, Republican president. We've never done it. So I know a lot of this seems like it's scorched earth, and maybe some of it is, but this is the only real opportunity that in my lifetime I've ever seen at having a chance of success in peeling some of this back. And I think maybe that's part of your perspective as well.
I agree. And I mean, what's been making the Twitter sphere or the X sphere, whatever, is Bill Clinton called for Doge-like efforts. President Obama called for Doge-like efforts. I was on the phone with a friend today, and he had a great line. He said, this is like Harvey Weinstein. Everybody knew that this terrible stuff was going on, and nobody did anything about it. And what Trump and Musk have done is finally not just called it out, but tried to take action. And I was also read somebody was talking today about how, oh, well, I support this effort, but, you know, this is too much too fast.
Right, right.
And I agree that, but think about the only alternative is a blue ribbon commission that takes 3 years to study the problem and it gets forgotten. I mean, we have tried and tried and tried to do something about it. Well, not tried. We've talked about it. And finally, he's doing it. And the way you do it is with a chainsaw. And I would rather do too much and build back than not do anything.
I'm with you on that, yeah. Because I've seen, look, Simpson Bowls comes to mind. I had great conversations. I loved Alan Simpson. I thought some of those recommendations were great. Nothing happened. The Grace Commission. I'm so sick and tired of blue ribbon panels because there is nothing that gets done. So now you have people. Let's go to 60 Minutes because I watched 60 Minutes this morning. I wanted to watch all three stories. The story on Timothy Chalamet is actually really good. The other two are kind of crap, like 60 Minutes would be expected to do. But they do an entire segment, Peter, on Doge and USAID. And not one time, and I was paying attention because I was ready to cite it, not one time did they mention anything about any specifics of the wasteful spending or where this money's being spent. It was all about the poor people that work for USAID and how Trump and Musk are, you know, doing a, you know, whatever the hell right. they're describing it. It's just ridiculous.
Well,
coup. That's what they want to say. It's a coup.
Well, Musk has not gotten into this yet, but we, Real Clear Investigations, and others have reported that there's been found about $2.7 trillion of improper payments in the last two decades. So anybody who says there isn't fraud, fraud's been established.
Yeah.
It's been proven. Anybody who's read any of the COVID stories knows that scammers, many of them abroad, stole hundreds of billions of dollars. So the idea that he hasn't shown fraud, he doesn't need to because it's already been established.
Thank you. And let me make a broader point there because I was trying to say that last week because people kept saying, where's the fraud? Look, all you had to do is Google something. The IRS 1 year ago in March of last year put up on their website a report of $9 billion in CARES Act fraud. And that's just the CARES Act.
Oh, I mean, and again, just Google improper payments.
Right.
And you will get trillions of dollars. So they're totally disingenuous with that. What I would say, though, is if we want to really just take a step back, most of the federal spending that's given us the giant debt is great society programs. It's Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. I think there's probably a little bit of will to do something about Medicaid because it's poorer, able-bodied young people. But we're probably never going to really address the deficit unless we figure out something to do about those things. So I think
I
that
agree.
This is important what he's doing. The other thing I'd say is, you know, a lot of what Trump and Musk are doing is really about institutional capture. And that is the people working at these bureaucracies all are from the left. And that's why you see that 98% of the people in Washington, D.C., and then a little lower, but mostly the surrounding counties in Virginia and Maryland, they're all Democrats. So he can remove a bunch of those people, but I don't know who you replace them with unless a bunch of conservatives decide they want to go spend their lives working for the federal government. So it's just a, I think you can downsize, but the sort of institutional capture, the assumptions that these people have that guides what they think is well and good, is just another challenge. And I'm not saying, you know, you don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and I think they're doing a lot of good, but, you know, it's a really hard problem that they're addressing.
It is. And, you know, I guess a lot of us might be in the camp to say, even if they can claw back some of this nonsense, it's worth it because we haven't had any level of success. One of the things that you pointed out goes to an issue that I raised last week, twofold. I would say, why in the hell are we, you know, why did it take Elon Musk and Donald Trump to expose a lot of this in the last 3 weeks? And by the way, where have our friends in journalism been? The ones that want to point to all this right now and act like it's a coup, where have they been reporting some of this stuff? Because clearly they're not interested in the waste at all. They're only interested in the federal bureaucracy, you know, aspect of this. It's quite staggering when you listen to CNN compared to Fox or CBS or some of these other outlets. Now, I could criticize Fox a little bit for perhaps not getting into some of the legitimate questions about the way that this is, you know, going down. But the other side acts like there's no waste or anything. No fraud, no abuse, nothing. This is all fine. You know, drag shows in Burma. No problem. Let's write the check.
So I would say that the, and this is one of the points I wanted to make in my column, was for a long time, and I think there was some truth to this, journalists just felt like the public knew that the debt was horrible, knew we were spending too much money, but it was boring. Like, no one's going to go read some eat your peas story about the federal budget.
Right.
And I think I think one of the great triumphs of Musk so far is that he's made math sexy again. He's made these numbers for a little while something that we're all interested in, and the pace of the revelations really makes it quite exciting, what he's doing with these government numbers, which mostly people probably would have just, you know, moved on to something else in their reading. I think that's something that he's done that's made a difference.
But one of the criticisms, Peter Zane is here from Real Clear Investigations. What I hear a lot of folks on the left saying is like, they're just going through, I had someone on Twitter say this, it's just a bunch of teenagers that are going through and they're, you know, they're addressing spending projects that they don't like. So it's basically only about things that they don't like the money being spent on. It's not about anything more. That's one of the criticisms that they level. Just nonsense.
Well, two points to that. One is that, yes, and those you guys were pressing your own things that you like for so long. So there's actually a half of America that doesn't agree with what you're doing, and actually more than that at this point. So that's one. Two, again, the disingenuousness of these people. If you spent any time in Washington, you would be shocked at how young everybody is that's doing all the work.
Oh, yeah.
There are the older, established people up top. Elon Musk, at least, is not just taking some guy who, like, oh, I went to Dartmouth, so therefore I'm smart. These are actually super accomplished people, you know, many of them who didn't need to go to college because they were so darn smart. They instead started their own companies. So, you know, but the idea that the youth is a problem, just go look at who staffs these federal agencies. They're all children.
But the narrative,
the old man.
Yeah, the narrative from the children that are also working behind the desks at newspapers and media outlets out there is that, oh, this is going to hurt, you know, kids. I'm sure kids will be cited because all these NIH grants will be cut back and you won't be able to have these experts do their research, which is typically wrong to begin with. And we're not going to be able to pay them to do the research that's wrong to begin with now. So that's going to kill kids. That's sort of the narrative that we'll hear.
So the two things. One is the only people that they've gotten rid of so far were people who were probationary workers. So all these CDC people were people who were hired in the last year. They didn't get rid of, like, the seasoned person who's got 20 years or whatever. Maybe some of those people should go, too. But the federal bureaucracy grew, like, 8 or 10% employees, Biden added. I think 8 or 10%. And, of course, there's a whole other pool of employees, which is the contractors, which is, like, 7 million people.
Right.
But so that's another thing you got to go after. There's about 2.5 million people that work for the federal government, and there's 7 million contractors and grantees.
But so, in that 60 Minutes piece that I mentioned, they have these two people that work for USAID, and they don't know how to pay their bills, and they don't know what's going to happen yet. All these people are sharing the story of families that are, well, here's one of the issues, I think, from my perspective. People that have worked in these federal bureaucracies, and this probably trickles down to the state and local level, certainly here in St. Louis, they're not used to anything like this, because the rest of us have been fired. A lot of us have had to find jobs. We've been, you know, the victims of layoffs.
That's my next column.
But yeah, these workers.
It's shocking. And in journalism in particular.
Yes.
It's been ravaged. It's just shocking to me that these people are pretending like you can't fire somebody where everybody they know has lost their jobs and had to get on in their lives. And many of them have had to leave the field they wanted to do. It's so unrealistic.
Well, that, you know, I want to have empathy for people who aren't going to have a job, but I think that they're not looking at these issues through a lens that the rest of America operates from. So I'm looking forward to that column, Peter Zane. I think that's a great topic.
Yeah, no, it's there is basically an air of unreality because these people, my colleagues in journalism, are results-oriented, and the result they want is to defeat Trump. And what's interesting about it is that you see that Democratic voters in general, either there are some who are mad, but most of them are like wait and see or holding their fire. The Democratic Party, you know, part of it is that they are, you know, not together on a message, but they can't find a message because a lot of what Trump is doing is popular. So almost all of the vigorous resistance now is the media. And what they're showing us once again is how the left-wing legacy media has been a prime source of divisive partisanship. Because what they have done is they have a view that are held by 10 or 15% of the elite. And the rest of the country doesn't agree with it or doesn't understand it. And that's what you see with you know, the trans sports stuff and all of this stuff with USAID, as people learn about it, you know, they're horrified. They're like, why are we spending our money on this? But the 15% of elite people who work at the big journalism outfits, who go to Davos, who run government agencies, they have very particular views. And so while the rest of the country's sort of cheering or wait and see, we're seeing now how out of touch they are and also how mean they are.
Yeah, it's on full display.
Because they don't just cover this with understanding and compassion. They attack in the harshest terms.
My friend Scott Jennings has been keeping a check on some of that at CNN, and I have some audio to share from Scott here in just a couple of minutes. Peter Zane, always great to have you on. Thank you so much. I look forward to the next column.
Thank you.
All right,
pleasure.
Take care.
And congratulations on the racquetball win.
I need that. Thank you very much. Yeah, the sport that nobody plays, but I did get two victories, so that was good. Listen, I have a collection of audio here that really applies to everything that we've just been talking about. First, Lee Zeldin, former New York congressman who is working on the Trump team now.
So starting September 18th of 2024, there was a financial agent agreement that was entered into between the Biden Treasury Department and this outside bank. After that, there were additional agreements, an account control agreement, amended account control agreement. The dates show this rush. It was actually on Election Day, November 5th, that the General Counsel's Office was providing a legal opinion on it.
So this is at EPA because he's the EPA Administrator, Lee Zeldin.
Amending these account control agreements right up to the week before inauguration. Now, $20 billion going out the door up front should be a big red flag, because what makes so much more sense is that if somebody is going to receive a grant, that they are doing work and then they're coming back and they're asking for the next tranche of money, as opposed to just fronting all of it. Now, what's crazy about these different agreements that I've read through over the course of the last few days is that they deliberately, in writing, make sure that they are drastically reducing accountability and oversight by the EPA, by government.
Yeah, this is where I think the EPA, you're going to find a lot of shenanigans for sure. But here's where it's going to get interesting. And, you know, I probably will spend more time on this tomorrow. There's going to be people throughout the country, including here in St. Louis, will be researchers at WashU or SLU or elsewhere that are on the government dole. You know, my favorite is the researchers, because they put these studies out and they're in journals that nobody gets, right? And they may make the news and they scare people, like you have to drink wine every day or, you know, your heart's going to go. And then they go back and forth. I remember the 80s, like, oh, if you drink wine, it's going to kill you. Then it was like, all right, drinking a wine, a glass a day, that's going to help your heart. They don't know. Okay.
No.
So look, there's science. I get that. But the experts are wrong on so many different fronts, and we pay for them to be wrong. I mean, our tax dollars pay for them to screw things up on a regular basis. I need to go no further than COVID. There's even some Dr. Birch stuff today that's pretty interesting on COVID. But let me get to some of the things related to DOGE on CNN. Here's Kevin O'Leary.
Always cut deeper, harder when there's fat and waste. The FAA, it's not the people. The code is cobalt. It's from the 60s. It needs CapEx put into it for the technology to be upgraded to make it safer. Fat, like a chicken. All of these agencies are like big fat chickens dripping over barbecues of fat. This is the best barbecue I've ever seen, but
yes.
I don't think it's happening fast enough.
Yeah.
Not cutting enough. Keep slashing, keep hacking while you have a 24-month mandate before the midterms. Cut, 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 cut more.
Yes, more, more, more. But you know what that's going to do? According to, I don't know who this idiot is, but you're going to hear Jennings weigh in, that's going to ruin the economy of Kansas City.
Is it?
Well, this is good news for St. Louis, because they've been kind of kicking our ass on some of the fronts. But apparently, they're more addicted to DOGE, I think, than St. Louis, because this woman on CNN thinks their economy's dead.
I actually think it's okay if they run into a stumble here or there, because the project is so massive. The need to cut is so massive. The government is so massive, it's inconceivable that you wouldn't make a mistake here or there. But I think that's acceptable if the greater goal is achieved, which is a smaller government, more efficient government.
Even if someone dies, because we're talking about.
Are you alleging someone has died from this?
We don't know. I'm talking about when the rubber meets the road. I'm talking about, for example, Kansas City, 30,000 mm-hmm. government employees might be laid off. It will destroy the economy of Kansas City. That's okay.
Okay, two things. Who's died? Okay, they're gonna blame everything on Trump and DOGE, right? But Kansas City's done. You better tell Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Why do you say that?
Because I'm reading what the individuals from Kansas City have been saying, that they're very concerned.
What do you think they're going to say when they're going to get whacked?
Of course they're going to say that. But my point is, do we think that's smart to live in an American city, just go under?
How many American cities need a massively oversized federal government to stay afloat? I mean, isn't that said more about the city than the government?
But when did we get to the point where presidents are measuring themselves by how many people they put out of work instead of how many people they get
and
jobs
not a moment too soon.
This is crazy. This is absolutely
because the government only ever gets
big
bigger,
fat chickens. Hopefully they lay some eggs and maybe then we can afford
it. No, you heard what Jennings said there. It only gets bigger. They only get fatter. This is why I support this, because they've never gotten thinner, not even just a little bit. Now we got, you know, Ozempic, and that's going to be a good thing. We got much more to go, plus an audio cut of the day. We gave away tickets to Kill Me last week. Ticket sales are red hot, so if you want to go to the factory, this is like the biggest venue that Brian will be playing. It's going to be great fun. He was streaming some of the show that he was doing over the weekend on Saturday night on Fox Nation. I think he might be with us tomorrow or Thursday. We always hook up with Brian each and every week, so that is something we'll look forward to and we'll keep you posted on for sure. You know, I was just paying some bills earlier this morning, looking at energy bills in particular. I talked about this 2 weeks ago because I told Fred they are doing this rate increase for Ameren, where they really want to jack up the rates by 15%. That seems to be something that all the utilities are doing. But, you know, I think things might change moving into this era with Trump when it comes to energy policy. But how will that really affect the consumer? Abby Foster is here. She's the vice president of policy and advocacy for the Retail Energy Advancement League. That sounds real important. It's a national advocacy organization dedicated to the expansion of retail energy markets. And I think we all know that the grid is somewhat of a question mark. Abby Foster, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
When it comes to just energy prices, it is not my imagination that things are kind of off the charts right now, right?
They are. They are. And actually, Missouri is not the only state. A lot of states that have a slim monopoly utility structure are facing the same trouble. So you guys are friends in arms in other states across the country.
Well, so what's driving all of the price increases, and what can be done about them? And I kind of alluded to the fact that the Trump White House is going to have some different energy policies related to some of the things that we talk about, you know, on a regular basis. So will there be an impact moving forward, maybe in the other direction? How would you describe sort of the climate right now?
So customers are starting to see price increases for a number of different reasons. In a lot of the monopoly utility states, which Missouri is one of the states that still protects a utility monopoly on the generation and sale of electricity. They have a lot of retirements of coal-fired resources or power plants that are coming to the end of their life cycle. And when that happens in a monopoly state, the utility gets paid plus a profit, and all of that's paid for by ratepayers to build new generation to replace that. And so all of that comes with a price tag, and ratepayers are starting to see for the first time, when some of these older assets are retiring, what it's like to pay for something when just one company is building it.
Well, and then some of this has to be that we're really, really good in this country at kicking the can down the road and waiting till a crisis, aren't we?
That's exactly right. And actually, Ameren had an issue with that with Rush Island, one of the coal-fired power plants. You might have seen and heard a few years ago when they brought that coal-fired power plant offline early because they had not managed the asset well and didn't install scrubbers that were required. And so now ratepayers are paying for that plant, even though it could have kept running for several years.
So I'm a free market person overall, free market guy, right? And always have been. But this has always been kind of something that's gnawed at me with, you know, utility companies in particular. And you referred to this as a monopoly, and it is, because we don't have choices. We can't go elsewhere. We have Spire here for our natural gas. We have Ameren for electricity. But we can't go to another company and say, okay, I like you better because, you know, I'm not getting the level of service. So that's always been problematic, especially because there is, as you indicated, Abby, a profit involved. So that kind of, and maybe this is big, bold, and, you know, beyond reality, but here we are in an era in Washington where we're really trying to shake things up and change things. Maybe we need to start talking, and I know this is what your organization does, talk bigger about ending this monopoly and maybe taking things in a different, you know, direction. Is that even possible?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it might seem like something very bold and unusual for Missouri, but it wasn't too bold for 14 other states that have done it. So Missouri is one of the states that still protects the utility monopoly. But there are 14 other states that have fully opened up the utility monopoly, and so the utility can no longer own the generation assets, and they can't sell electricity with a monopoly anymore. So now they have to compete just like any other company. And so it's private dollars that are invested in those states in the generation of electricity. So it's everything from coal to nuclear, natural gas, renewables. It's what the market dictates is what gets built, and it's what customers' preferences are that get built. And the customers don't have to pay for any of that until it gets bid successfully into the market.
Is there a way to explain how that might work? I know that there's some bills that are working its way through the legislature, one by Senator Nick Schroer, who's pretty close with this show, and I'm friends with Nick. I can ask him a little bit more about that. But is there a way to explain how this operates in other states and how, if this would actually pass and be implemented in Missouri, how it would work?
Yeah, you can thank those bold legislators. So as you mentioned, Senator Nick Schroer and Representative Don Mayhew, there's legislation introduced in both the House and Senate this year in Missouri. And it's not the first year. Legislation like this has been introduced and advocated for since 2018 in Missouri when several companies got together and tried to push for change. If the bills are passed, it would make it so that the utilities and only the utilities, so Ameren, Evergy, and Liberty, the co-ops and the municipal-owned are exempt from the legislation. But the investor-owned utilities, those three, would no longer be able to own the generation as a monopoly. They'd have to compete. And so they'd have to no longer get ratepayer dollars to pay for the investments. They would have to build it using their own dollars and compete just like any other company and like any other service that we buy and use in the course of our life. So if it passes, it would take about 3 years for it to be fully implemented so that residents could start shopping like they do in those other 14 states. And the Public Service Commission would oversee the process, and they would be responsible for regulating the market.
I should know this, and maybe I should have done my homework as a host, but what can you name a few of those other states? Is there anything near Missouri, for example, here in the Midwest that we can look to as a model?
Sure. Well, it actually, so Illinois is one of the states, and in Illinois, Ameren operates as the company who owns the poles and wires, just like they will in a restructured competitive state. But they also operate as a private company owning the generation assets. And so they're still profitable, even as a competitor in the Illinois market, buying and selling electricity and building generation. So it's clearly possible for them to do that in another state. Other states include Texas, Pennsylvania, Ohio. There's quite a few. I live in Pennsylvania. I've been shopping for the last 20 years. It's really easy. It's a simple process. I choose my energy supplier, and I always save significantly compared to what the utility default rate is.
So in theory, you would have, let's just kind of play this out for the listeners who are saying, well, I think a lot of people might think that this is very attractive. So you would have other companies that would come in, and I'm most interested here, you mentioned nuclear. We have a nuclear power plant in Fulton. I've just been mystified over decades why we haven't put more effort into nuclear energy, and now here we are on the precipice of some disasters, and maybe other people are going to ask those questions. But in a model in Missouri, if this would change, you'd have an opportunity to shop around a little bit for different options.
That's right. And actually, in a lot of those states, the Utility Commission manages a website so that it's really easy for customers to compare their options, and that's funded through a fee that's assessed on the suppliers that want to compete in the market. So it's all funded. And so I just go on, and every couple of months, every 6 months or so, I go onto my state utility corporation website. It's called papowerswitch.com. I put in my zip code, and I have over 100 offers to choose from.
That is interesting, because that's so foreign to those of us here, because we've never done anything like. Now, I must point out also that you said you're in Pennsylvania, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's still the state that won't let you buy, like, alcohol from grocery stores and stuff. So that's a little backwards.
We can't win on everything.
Yeah, that's a little backwards. That's why we like our freedom here in Missouri. Handicap the option or the opportunity for this to happen. I'm a realist, Abby. So it doesn't seem like something as this might be a little radical in some people's minds is going to have success the first go around here this session. What would your anticipation be?
So I, as more legislators are hearing from their constituents, I mean, you mentioned the Ameren rate increase. Ameren and the utilities in Missouri have not been investing in generation significantly to replace the assets that are coming offline. Ratepayers are going to be feeling it, and they're going to be feeling it a lot over the next 5 years. In the next 10 years, Ameren has projected it's going to be $13 billion just to replace what's retiring. And so the ratepayers are on the hook for that. And their legislators, I'm sure they're going to be letting them know. And so the more that legislators are hearing from their constituents, they're going to be looking at alternative options, and competition is best in everything else. Why not for your electric provider?
I don't know what the number might be, but if you look, and you guys have some of these figures, if you just take like the time that the pandemic started 4 years ago to now, it's like 30% increase in energy prices.
Yeah, and actually, that's been part of the challenge, you know. So in a lot of the monopoly states, because they have a lot of baseload electricity, older resources, rates have historically been low. And so it's been okay to maintain the status quo. But for the first time, ratepayers are seeing what it's like to see the utilities build something and to see one company having control over all of that. And so Missouri actually in 2023, they ranked fourth worst in the U.S. for how fast the rate increased over that course of that year. And so rates are still relatively okay. You're still kind of going along okay, but it's increasing quickly.
Yeah, and they want more. Keep us posted on this, Abby. Thanks so much, because I do think it's a fascinating topic. We'll see what happens, and I'll get with Senator Schor as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having
us. Take care. Yeah, it's just, you know, it was interesting. I was looking at bills today, Sue. And mind you, you know, some of this is hard to gauge because I was looking at the annual, you know, if you look at last February and January or December. Now, we had much colder temps in December, January, and now February.
Wow.
No, this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
way.
Right. In other words, so you can see the spike in the prices and how much you're spending every month, but there's different variables, different factors mm-hmm. that play in. But I will say just overall, you can kind of feel the impact. Now, this is where Sue always says, this is why you need your budget billing, and I don't do the budget billing.
It is why you need it.
But I gauge it from, because I tell you, sometimes during the winter, you know, my electric bill in particular isn't that high because I have geothermal, but I'm getting whacked right now. And I don't know if it's just because of the cold temperatures or something else, but that's an interesting concept
Wait,
to have
you mean the,
competition.
The electric is high
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, like really high.
Wonder what that is.
Well, I think everyone's getting high, you know.
I don't know because I'm a budget biller.
Well, that's maybe it, but see what happens. Your budget bill is going to go up as well. Audio cut of the day is coming up. All right, I have quite a bit to do with audio cut of the day, so maybe we just wind everything in
come
today.
On.
Wait, that wasn't what I wanted to play. What was that? That was something from one of my hotkeys. Do you know what that was?
No, I couldn't tell.
Didn't it sound like a woman's voice?
A little bit.
Okay, I don't know what that was, but I hit something that I shouldn't have. Let's do this here.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, I do have several topics, and we'll have a couple of light things to round out the audio cut of the day as well. Why are you laughing at me, Ethan? Did you know what I did, where that voice came from?
Yeah, you accidentally hit the Kamala hockey.
Ah, that's what it was, Kamala. Is that what I did? Here it is, here.
Kamala.
That's right, it was. So you have these great things here, like this is...
I can't wait until American women can't get blueberries for their smoothies.
I love that. You know what else is on here? This. Man, I love this thing.
It's time for Insect News.
Yeah. Boom. Man, that's my favorite sounder.
Good.
And you haven't had any insect news.
I know. I've been trying. I got nothing.
Okay. Did I hit cut of the day audio?
I can't remember.
Well, I'll do it again.
Oh,
did I?
Ethan said
Ethan says I did. I can't
we
remember, so I'm going to do it again.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, so, you know, somehow we were talking about COVID here earlier this hour, and I remembered that I had something here from Piers Morgan and Dr. Birx. You remember Dr. Birx, who would go up there every day with Dr. Fauci and ask questions answer questions in theory during the pandemic? You remember her. She was the one that was up there every day with Fauci.
Oh, I'm
sure. Dr. Deborah Birx. You'd know her, believe me. So now she's saying some very interesting things about what happened back then. And the topic was RFK Jr. and vaccines at first.
I think that there's a lot of Americans who are supportive of this effort to clear.
Hang on. He played the wrong bite. Boy, I'm having a day. Let me tell you right now. Okay. Here she is, Deborah Birx.
He made it very clear to every mom out there that his children were immunized about childhood vaccines.
Yeah.
And what we've done wrong in public health is we didn't explain that COVID vaccines were nothing like the childhood vaccines, and that the childhood vaccines, like many of the diseases, you get it once, you don't get it again. And this is getting the children to have that disease without getting the deadly consequences. That is not what the COVID vaccine was designed to do. It wasn't designed to prevent against infection. And if you look at the vaccine hesitancy rates, they've doubled since COVID. So we have to start addressing these things.
Well, some of us were kind of talking about that during the rollout of the vaccine. It's pretty stunning when you listen to what she says now, and Piers noticed that.
And Deborah, let me ask you, Deborah, I mean, given that you were the face of COVID from the Trump presidency at the time, do you share this doctor who I was with? Do you share the concerns about the longer term negative impact of some of the COVID vaccines?
The messenger RNA vaccine should have been rolled out for the people that were at risk for severe disease, because that's what the disease, that's what the vaccine was developed for. But when we say that we're following the science and the data, we need to follow the science and the data. And the science and the data said people primarily over 65 or people with significant comorbidities were at risk for severe disease. Those are the individuals that should have been immunized first.
You think? I mean, again, hearing some of this 4 years later is really quite stunning, because some of what was done to the American people really by Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci was criminal.
We should have put our science behind our immunization schedule and protected those most at risk. It went into young people in hospitals before it went into our elderly in nursing homes.
Idiotic.
That is not following the science and the data. So I am all for following the science and the data, but it shouldn't just be a statement. It should be a reality. And when we don't match what we do in public health to the science and the data, that is when we get into trouble. And that's when we start to fracture trust with the American people.
Okay, why is she saying this now?
Right. This is where we all, well, and I don't even know what the format was, why she was on there talking about all that with him now. But to your point, what in the hell? Like, where was the courage to say some of this? A lot of us were screaming at the top of our lungs that, you know, this needed to be changed, right? And we needed to address, like, just the issue of older people being prioritized and younger people. I can't remember, I think it was Dr. Ricker, who was the previous superintendent at Rockwood. He was the guy I kind of liked before the other guy that finally is out of there, and now we have a different guy. But I told him at the time, I rolled out what I called the Mark Reardon plan. Get those damn kids in kindergarten first.
Yes.
Get them into school.
Yes.
You want to take a little time with the high school kids? Okay, do what you have to do. But these little kids need to go to school
right now.
And you know what the teachers union said? Now, I get this wasn't all teachers. Oh, you're going to kill teachers. They would hold signs at protests. Yeah,
yes.
It was a thing.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And now you got kids that are three grades behind in reading because of all that nonsense. It's embarrassing. And I do think some of it is criminal. So I have a little bit more time here, so I have to go to Senator Kennedy, just because he's such a wordsmith and he offered some heartfelt advice to Democrats.
In terms of the Democrats, I've got a lot of friends who are Democrats, and they haven't asked me for advice, but if I did, I'd tell them, look, you just got to try harder not to suck. I mean, think about it. Over the past 4 years, the Democrats mismanaged Congress. They mismanaged COVID. They mismanaged the economy. They mismanaged inflation. They mismanaged the national debt. They mismanaged Afghanistan. More recently, in their opposition to President Trump and Mr. Musk, the Democrats have chosen to support the bureaucrats and the spending porn over the American taxpayer.
You can't argue with any of that. And that's why he's featured in so many of the Mark Reardon Show opens. Then to the lighter elements of our audio cut of the day. And I'm just going to tell you that this is probably just a little bit more visual than it is audio. But I'll tell you what happened here when Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, is up on stage in London for the BAFTAs. The BAFTAs, the British awards like the Oscars, right?
Right.
And he's going to announce who the best picture winner is.
So what makes us love cinema so much that we're all gathered here to celebrate tonight? For me, it's that films create worlds so vivid and stories so powerful that we lose ourselves in them completely. They create immersive cinematic landscapes.
All right, so you can't really, you can hear it a little bit, but what happened was he's up on stage and he's got a tuxedo on and his pants fall down. They just fall down and he's reaching behind him. Apparently the people that were on or near the stage say basically he dropped trowel right there on that stage and he's trying to hold it together.
Oh
right,
my gosh,
and give
what
the award.
A mess.
Yeah, but they didn't catch it. Like the only thing that you're going to see on camera is, you know, him looking uncomfortable because
right.
They don't actually have him when he dropped trout. And then I, you know, offered this as an example earlier today. My daughter, I surprised my daughter and my wife with a cruise for spring break. So I kind of told you about this, you know, a few weeks ago.
A nice gift.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty nice too, although now I can't find the audio that I was going to share. But here's the problem. And I'm going to skip the audio because I can't find it. My eyes can't go to it. I, on Friday night, we make a poster for Alexa. And we're very excited. My wife had to know because of the cancellation policies. You're going on a cruise for spring break. She's excited, right? And then Sunday we realized Mark booked for the wrong date. Like, I picked the week after spring break in Rockwood.
I still don't know how this happened. I did it, Sue.
I'm an idiot. What else can I tell you? Have a great night. We'll talk tomorrow.
You got it.
Get more at 971talk.com.